You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. California is well known for its wine regions, from Napa and Sonoma to Lodi, the Delta, and the foothills. But recently, the industry has been facing some major headwinds not seen in decades, from consumers shifting their preference to other kinds of alcohol or just drinking less, maybe avoiding it altogether. As a result, wine tourism is down, and growers are harvesting less grapes as demand slumps, with state officials saying last year's harvest was the smallest in two decades. And these changes are leading some wineries or tasting rooms to close their doors for good, including some in our backyard. Joining us now to talk about what's driving this slump and where you can still go out and experience wine country is Insight's resident wine expert, Rick Cushman. Welcome back, Rick.
Thank you very much.
So this is not the first time we have talked about the challenges facing the wine industry. But this latest grape crush report from the state, I mean, it just feels like a big deal. As someone like you, you cover wine in-depthly. How significant are these challenges facing the industry?
Significant is the word. I mean, they're big. And there was, you know, all kinds of markers that show that. One was how many grapes did not get picked. 400,000 tons of grapes in California didn't get picked. And it's just cheaper to leave them out there. And frankly, it's expensive to take out a vineyard. You know, there's a lot that has to come out. And so that's been the first easy to see thing. Another thing is that winery closures. But what the reason why they're still out there is because there just is not the demand. And so a lot of, in our region in particular, they've been particularly hard hit because places like Lodi and the foothills, they know, besides the wineries, they've been growers for a long time. Some places are just growers. And they sell to the major companies, all the big supermarket wines, as well as Napa Cabernet and things like that. And so when the demand's not there and you're a grower and they don't get contracts renewed, and a lot of them have not had contracts renewed, and that's the real sign of the downturn in terms of volume, is the fact that growers are seeing that they don't have contracts for next year.
And I know that you laid out that this is significant, but is this also perhaps cyclical? Have there been slumps like this before? Is it just wine coming in and out of fashion?
Well, that's a good question. But some of the things this time feel different. And in fact, I just saw a report this morning from, it's an international analytics group that analyzes wine, and it says that by 19, I'm giving away my age, by 2034, that most of other alcohol is expected to rebound a little. Beer, because beer's down, everybody's down a little. As you mentioned, people are drinking less. But wine is the one that's expected not to rebound, at least not enough. And so there's a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons is that the generations that fueled the boom, boomers, old guys like me, they're aging out, or they bought a lot and they're going slow. But, you know, the cyclical part that makes sense is that, you know, culturally, we kind of waver back and forth. We always do. Whatever is the newest thing. And the newest thing is not wine. But there's another part of it, too, which is that it used to be you figured that young people would get into wine eventually because, you know, they're into the foodie experience and all. It's a little different now. The foodie experience is different. You know, we've talked about that in the past. You know, it's a lot more grazing, a lot more a little bit here, a little bit there, a lot of eating at home. And so there's a lot less going out and trying wine. But then there's also wine's continued resistance to being friendly. And, you know, I've been harping on that since, God knows, since I first started talking about it here. But, you know, they don't make it easy. It's expensive. So if I'm a young person or an old person and I want to try something new, I want to try beer, what's the cost? I go to a restaurant even. It's expensive. It's $8, $9. A bottle of wine's three times that, four times that, you know, and it's a whole bottle. So how do you know you're going to like it? Wine by the glass is much more expensive than a cocktail or beer by the glass. Going into a supermarket is astoundingly confusing. And the industry doesn't help. And part of the problem is they call it the curse of knowledge. When you know something well, you don't realize how other people don't know it at all. But part of it is that there has always been this sort of race to coolness or elitism. The elitism is maybe the better point in that because if you look elite, then you can raise prices. But the problem is if you've been raising prices, that's for people already buying wine. And if those people are buying less wine, you're making it really hard for people who don't buy wine to get into it. And this is new for the industry. And this dilemma, until they get their heads above ground and start to look around and realize that people aren't like them, it's only going to get worse.
It seems like kind of a marketing problem has developed over the years with a new generation of people who drink and drink differently.
Right. And you listen to some of the inside wine folks talk about how to fix it. And they say things like, well, we need to get our customers educated. To which I say, what kind of business model is that where your customer has to get an education before they can buy your product? Imagine somebody needing to learn about beef before they go to McDonald's. You know, it is absolutely crazy. And some of the other ideas are like, well, we need to get back to native varietals, which is, you know, grapes that grow in that region originally. That's really cool if you know this stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you're somebody who's just experimenting, how about just make approachable wine and make it friendly?
And make it fun.
Yes.
It should definitely be fun. I mean, California has a big footprint in wine across the world. I'm wondering, is California harder hit? I know a couple months ago we were talking to some winemakers and just learning about the tariff problem and how that's impacting some wineries because Canada is the largest buyer of California wine. However, on the flip side, you have other wine countries like Hill Country in Texas. It's smaller, but more maybe mom and pop. I don't know how much they export compared to California. I mean, is California shouldering the brunt of these changes and challenges, or is this just a global problem for wine?
Well, yes and yes. It is a global problem. Everybody's feeling it. And, you know, they're leaving lots and lots of grapes out in the vineyards in France and Spain and Italy. I mean, France, you know, farmers riot. You know, they don't just protest. They drive trucks into the middle of the street and stop and do all kinds of things. And wine is such a huge piece of the culture there, or had been, but it's less there, too. So that's part of it. California has been hardest hit in the U.S. and probably as much as any region in the world because, one, California makes so much, grows so much wine, produces so much wine, and has such great wine tourism. And two, because, and this is where the tariffs come in. So we're talking about how our growers, like the folks in Lodi and the foothills, where they grow a lot of wine for the big wine companies, including my own old employers at Gallo and many others. And those old employers used to buy California grapes, but it's cheaper to buy European juice, basically wine made from European grapes, you know, and made over there in Europe and shipped in giant bags, you know, plastic bags, so it's
really
airtight. And it's cheaper to do that than it is to buy California grapes because those folks are hurting too, so they're really downpricing and they're getting rid of what they call bulk wine. And then they take it and they put it into not the most expensive wines in the world, but, you know, wines we all know in supermarkets. And so if you're Lodi or the foothills, tariffs aren't such a bad thing if it makes that more expensive. However, there's repercussions from tariffs that all California will feel and all the U.S. will feel, which is that everybody else down the chain, including the wineries themselves, because it's not just the wine, but then it's corks and production. And then if imported wines start to get expensive, it starts to hurt restaurants. Mm-hmm. You know, and folks might raise prices here and at restaurants and distributors and stores, and there's this sort of chain of events. But in California, it's particular because they both grow so much and produce so much. America is one of the largest both producers and consumers of wine, and California is like 70% of that.
Is there too much? Is it kind of a wave crashing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's too much wine for now. Yeah. And, you know, everybody rushed in. It's common, right? It's common in everything. You know, you think about streaming services, you know, or craft beer,
right?
You know, but two different things were really popular and everybody got into it. And look how many streaming services went away or started charging a lot, and how many craft beers died and things. Anytime something is popular, of course, there's business goes into it and private capital goes into it, too. So there's a lot of that. And But part of it was that just people that loved wine fell in love with it, and they bought, if they had money, they bought a couple of vineyards, or they bought into wineries, and then, you know, a wealthy doctor here and a wealthy grocer there, and somebody was successful, you know, that their retirement is to open a winery or open a small vineyard. And there's all of that, and those little folks are real, you know, it's like they're on both sides of the coin because there's so little they can adjust, but if you're not attracting newer people to your winery, you're in a lot of trouble.
You mentioned that areas like Lodi and the foothills are among the hardest hit because they're at different stages of wine, from growing to production, and then at the end having tasting rooms. How are there some regions that are actually doing okay? They're doing better?
Well, some regions are suffering less. I mean, for example, Temecula in Southern California, because that is basically the tasting room for the L.A. basin, mm-hmm. you know, and everybody drives east 90 minutes and gets drunk and then drives home on the freeway. So don't go on a Sunday on a freeway in Southern California. But more seriously, like Napa's still okay. Sonoma's still okay. Now, there have been closures and grapes not sold there. But Napa has a different business model. Napa's business model is to appeal to what they call high net worth individuals, which is wine country talk for really rich people. And so wine's very expensive. Tasting room costs are very, very expensive. The average is like $72 for regular tasting and $135 for reserve tasting. So, but they cater the experience to the rich. And those folks are fine. They show up once or twice. They spend a lot of money. They go to very expensive hotels, very expensive restaurants, and people like me walk in and they don't want me in there. You know, and frankly, part of those expensive prices are to signal that people like me don't belong there. So they're doing okay, but even then, the downturn's hurting them because of the boomers that were buying lots of Napa Cabernet and things like that, and the restaurants that were buying Napa Cabernet, Napa Chardonnay, whatever it is, they're buying less of it. And same for Sonoma. Sonoma's a little less snooty, a little less expensive. They're far more approachable. They're very well known. Both of them get tourists still, but less. And they're going to start feeling it too.
How many wineries have been forced to close up shop?
Well, you know, I haven't seen any real numbers, but I can tell you a couple that names that people know. You know, for example, in the foothills, you know, the wineries that are on for sale. Now, what happens afterwards, it's hard to know. But like Cooper Vineyards and Sidi Gerri and Terra d'Oro, which used to be Montevigna, and they're owned by a big company. They may close. Skinner in El Dorado County, which they're lovely, and they're for sale. And then places like we were talking about tasting room closes, mm-hmm. right? Turley, which was a big name in Amador, they closed that one. The Amador 360 was this great wine shop in Amador. They closed for the same reasons. Or in Napa, Paradox, which is owned by Duckhorn, they closed. Duckhorn's closing a lot of its tasting rooms. And Tumi, which is both of their tasting rooms, and Sonoma Cutrer in Windsor in Sonoma County. You know, so it's not just the little guys. It's all of them are either closing tasting rooms or closing. The Newton is down for sure. Newton was this really beautiful place in Napa Valley, had great gardens. I mean, they got damaged by the fire, but then they saw that there was not going to be enough demand for them to come back. It wasn't worth it to them. And so, you know, we're still seeing more. I mean, you know, this is still starting to unravel. And then if there are significant tariffs and how that affects everybody, because it's going to go both ways. If we put tariffs on some places, it's going to put tariffs on us. And where that leads is going to be more closures for sure.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Insight's resident wine expert, Rick Cushman, about California's wine industry, which is facing a downturn not seen in decades. I always want to save the end of our conversation on some good news just to get out there, to enjoy, to experience. And today you want to focus on maybe arguably some of the lesser-known areas, Calaveras County, Placer County. Why should people head out and visit these areas for wine?
Well, for a bunch of good reasons.
And Nevada County, too.
And Nevada County, yeah. Yeah, I mean, all of those. And our foothills, too. But, I mean, there are foothills. All those are our foothills. Well, part of it is that they're less expensive. They're far more accessible than we think of. I mean, I have really fallen for Calaveras County wines, and they're really good.
The town of Murphy's is so charming.
It is charming. You know, it used to be like this, you know, just giant happy hour walking up and down the street, but that's not true anymore. Now the wineries are much better. There's restaurants. There's a bunch of stuff going on, and it does have this great old West foothills charm. But it's also, you know, they're very friendly. And what is so good about those little places and, you know, like wineries in Nevada City, it doesn't have that snootiness that we were talking about because they just deal with regular folk. They're not trying to prove anything. They'll show you their vineyards and how they make wines, and they got dogs and the tasting rooms, and there's all kinds of fun stuff like that. And all of those places do really, really nice things. The one thing I should always caution when I say they're less expensive, you're not going to find like $9 and $10 bottles of wine because they're not large enough to have those kinds of economies of scale. So those wines that a lot of people buy at supermarkets, that's because the wineries are big. But their expensive stuff isn't that expensive, and it's much less expensive than other places, and it's worth it. And, you know, and you're supporting locals. You're buying wine from the person who makes it or who owns the winery or both. And that's part of the charm of going to those places, like all of those areas.
And I think with wine, I mean, I enjoy going wine tasting, but when going with groups, even if someone maybe isn't into wine, you can still definitely like the experience
Absolutely.
Of going to wine country. There's usually a band playing, there's other activities and events, and I would think that they're incorporating more of that to try to overcome these challenges.
Well, this is the good news behind all of that, is that the smart folks have figured that out. I mean, there's still a lot of wineries. And once again, we're talking about the ones that sort of cater to more expensive wines. But they've learned that what they need is, you know, music on the weekends or during the week and food and different experiences. So you go, what you're going to is this absolutely beautiful country. And the nice thing about wine country is it is by definition pretty because it has to be because it's got vineyards all over it. And, you know, and so... But, you know, in our foothills and all of those counties you talk about, a lot of those places have great views because it's hilly and rolling and you're sitting on a deck somewhere. And even if you don't drink wine, it's, you know, it's hard to find a better place to go. And that's really what they're learning. And they're also learning to do other experiences. And they range from things like, you know, having painting to walks in the garden to, dinners in the vineyard to everything in between. And so many of those folks up there are really figuring out how to do it with concerts. There's lots of concerts in the Foothill Wineries. You can't do that in a lot of places like Napa Sonoma because of permitting issues, but that's not a problem in Amador and Calaveras and all the others.
When you're talking to wineries, you know, as I don't know if it's just my algorithm, but you have more mocktails or non-alcoholic options. Are winemakers starting to incorporate that more into their production? Is that even possible or financially realistic?
It's a great question, Vicki, and it's a real dilemma for the industry. Right now, they're working on it. You know, it's the largest growth. It's a large growth sector, but by large, it's, you know, that's just compared to what it was because it's less than 1% of wine sales, non-alcoholic and low-alcoholic wine. But part of the problem is that it's not like beer. Like you can make NA beer and you make up the difference with hops and it still kind of tastes like beer. But you take out the alcohol and certainly the mechanisms that they use now, which is, you know, sort of they spin it out and it's a way of removing alcohol, but it also removes so much of the other parts of the wine, like flavor. Yeah, it takes the flavor out. That's not a good thing. And alcohol gives body, you know, a sense of silkiness, sometimes a sense of sweetness. So when you're removing that, you're changing the wine in general. And, you know, and this is why it's a dilemma, because on the one hand, a lot of the wineries would like to be able to sell this stuff. On the other hand, and I've done this because I've judged these in wine competitions, if you taste it, you're going, I can drink something that tastes a lot better than this. So you're actually driving potential new customers away if you're not doing it right. And they'll tell you that we're still learning how to do this. You know, on the record, they'll say, oh, we make really good stuff because they want you to buy it. But the truth of it is when you talk to them, you know, we're still figuring out we haven't got it. The one kind of wine that's closest is sparkling because of the bubbles.
Oh, so it kind of it masks it a little bit.
It masks it. It gives it some sense of body, you know, and one of the ways that they've been making up for the lack of alcohol is with, by adding sugar. But, you know, that just goes in one, you know, that's for Pepsi drinkers. But if you don't, you know, if you're not a soft a cocktail, I mean, if you want a real cocktail, a real hard kind of a drink, that's not going to make you feel. But the bubbles, you can do that. So the wine doesn't have to be as sweet and gets a little bit of fizz and sort of tastes like sparkling wine. Mm.
Rick, it's always nice to see you.
Always great to be here.
Rick Cushman is Insight's wine guy, and we've been talking about the major factors behind a downturn in California's wine industry, as well as where you can still go to get the experience of wine country. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.